You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. This show is dedicated to everybody that's married out there, because I think that a lot of us who are married, we wonder how much we argue versus other couples. You know, how much arguing in a marriage is normal and honestly healthy? And I think because there's not a bunch of like focus groups based on this, there's not a lot of groups that people come together and, well, I argue this amount, we argue about this and that, and we argue this many times a day. We wonder, is our marriage successful? Is our marriage good? Is it going to last the test of time? Are we going to argue each other to death? And I think that's interesting because every time I go to the airport, every time I'm in any airport, doesn't matter what airport, I mean, this is across the board, I hear and see couples arguing, fighting, really, rowing, you might say. And I go, oh my gosh, and it doesn't end. And I wonder, I go, how much do I argue in my marriage? How much is that legitimate? How much isn't? How much is it drama, and how much is it I need to cool it? And so tonight I really want to analyze and I want to dig deep into marriage and arguing and what's normal and what's healthy and what's not. You know, they did a recent study that couples bicker an average of 2,455 times a year. 2,455 times a year couples bicker. And it's usually over money issues, laziness, not listening are amongst a lot of the gripes by couples. And it's interesting, these researchers talk about how people also argue about the snoring, driving too fast, the big one, what to have for dinner. That was a survey out of 3,000 couples. Interesting. And so how much arguing in a marriage is normal? How much of this is healthy and how much isn't? And I think one of the biggest deals that we as couples, as married folk might say, we as a married folk demographic, how much is that of us dealing with what we see our couple friends doing? You know what I'm talking about. We don't see our couple friends behind closed doors. We see them when we come over, when they're planning on having us come by. We see them out and about when we have dinner with them or a dinner party. But I think that there's a dichotomy there because I think there's two different changes and there's two different types of personas. I believe that a lot of these couples are two different acting. You have one side, which is behind closed doors, which we don't see. And then the other is public. It's behind closed doors versus public. And sometimes when we see couples in public, we make assumptions that their relationship has to be way better than ours. It has to be because they cuddle, they hold hands, they snuggle, they're so sweet. Oh my gosh, how sweet that is. But is that really true? Because I've been in relationships prior to my marriage where we were really awesome in public, but we were like the worst couple. And then I've been in relationships where we were the worst in public and probably the happiest behind closed doors. Like, we couldn't keep it together in front of people. We were having a fight, we were arguing and fussing and fighting, but when it was just them and me, totally different world. It's interesting. So a lot of times what we see is not really what we're getting. And it's not that we could ever compute that against ourselves because it's not a real factor. It's not a real mathematical equation. So let's talk about that. You know, a couple's sex life causes problems, apparently about 87 arguments a year. Think about that. As well as 67 arguments or tiffs relate to the partner not saying that they love them as much. They don't love them enough. They don't say, I love you enough. And so that creates a rift too. Think about all these various arguments that we have. And I think it's interesting when we think about cohabitating with another person that this is obviously going to cause problems. And it's normal because when you are living with someone else, when you're living with somebody else, you're going to have to deal with daily annoyances. You're going to have to deal with small issues. You're going to have to deal with household issues and housework issues. You're going to have to deal with what other people want for dinner and how clean other people are. What's their level of cleanliness? So I'm one of those kind of people. I'll give you a little, I'll shine the flashlight of light into me, into what I do, into the way I live. And so this will give you a little bit of spotlight on the level of organized I am. So when it comes to me being organized at home, when it comes to me to be organized at work, and I'm not talking about mental organization, I'm talking about, you know, files and that kind of sort of things organized, I'm not so good. Okay? And I try and I try, but I came from a long line of pack rats. My dad was a pack rat. His dad was a pack rat. And, you know, I came from a long line of that. I came from a long line of keeping stuff because you never know when you're going to need it. And I had something just the other day happen where I was able to use a resource that I had, and I thank God I had not thrown it away. But however, when you look at the grand scheme of things, I keep a lot of stuff. And that has a tendency of causing arguments in my marriage. The most recent argument that we've had, and the reason the argument has been steady, is because I have several friends who are OCD, high OCD levels. And every time they come by my house, it's like they see everything that's out of place. It's like I feel like I'm on Christmas vacation where Chevy's father-in-law's name is Art. And Art goes, hey, you know, some of the little lights aren't twinkling. Some of the little lights aren't twinkling. Well, I feel like that with some of my OCD friends where they point out every little problem. Well, this one's not that little a problem. It's kind of a bigger issue, but I recently kind of reorganized my house as far as my furniture is concerned. And I realized that I had a large piece of furniture in there, a couch actually, that wasn't going to really fit. There wasn't enough room to walk around it. Okay. But I like the couch. Okay. But there wasn't enough room to put around it. So we ended up moving it toward the door and I'm going to take it to storage. Well, this couch is quite big and I'm going to need two or three people to help me take it out. And so it's been sitting there since March. And I realize that this is months and months have gone by and I get it. It's been a good part of a third of a year, maybe more. But every time some of my friends come over, they go, you haven't done anything with this couch yet? And then that starts like this whole argument with my husband and I, Ashley, when are you going to take care of this couch? What are you going to do with this? I mean, you thought you were going to do this earlier. I mean, your friends helped you move it out of here to the door months ago. And that's an argument. That becomes an argument. What about when things fall apart? And so recently, I live in a condo, and recently we had a little issue with our dishwasher. Actually, the water was coming out of the dishwasher itself and going through the ceiling to the owner downstairs. And the reason why it was going through the ceiling is I believe there are concrete floors. However, the light fixtures somehow or not are linked up. And so they were actually leaking through the light fixtures. And so I had never met this neighbor of mine. Next thing you know, I didn't know this was going on. And I get a call from downstairs letting me know that I might have something leaking into the neighbor's house. So I'm like, automatically, I'm like, holy crap, what's going on? And I had just gotten home. It's 8:45 at night from work. I haven't eaten yet. I'm about to make some food. I'm just like, I'm stressed out. I got a lot on my plate. Trying to make some food. I look underneath the dishwasher and I see water coming out. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm over there trying to get towels, all this stuff. I stop the dishwasher. I'm trying to figure out what to do. Next thing you know, my husband and I kind of get into an argument about it. You know, what's going on? I'm like, if you really cared, you'd get up off the couch and help me. And so we go back and forth on this deal. And he had had a hard day, too. And he started maybe an hour before me. So he'd been at work since 7 to 8. And, you know, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And I'd been at work about 9 to about 9 almost. And so we were kind of both at each other's wits' end. And I was like, if you really cared, you'd get off the couch and help me. So that starts an argument about him and his work, being that he's worked. And we're all overworked and underpaid and all this stuff's going on. And I know that you feel this because you've been in these arguments before. Next thing you know, the doorbell rings. The doorbell rings. I open the door. Him and I are still arguing. And it's a guy I've never met. And I'm like, hi, how you doing? He's like, I'm the neighbor downstairs, and your water's coming through my ceiling. And so, anyway, long story short, we met him, and I had explained that I had turned off the dishwasher, and that I was actually cleaning it up. And I had gotten most of the water, almost all of it, and I had like four or five just completely sopping wet towels that I had gone through. And so we got to meet him in an interesting circumstance. However, these are the types of arguments that spouses have. These are the type of arguments we have. And I think anybody that would be in that same room with you would get the argument, even if it was a roommate. Roommates might have gotten home from work just then, sitting on the couch, dishwasher's overflowing, water's going into the neighbor's place underneath you, phones ringing from security, neighbors showing up at the door. I mean, come on. I mean, you're about to pull out your hair. And I think a lot of times we see that as marriage issues, but is it really marriage issues or is it cohabitational issues? And I want to talk about that later on in the hour as well. Also, I want to talk about being behind closed doors versus being in the public and not knowing what other couples are doing and actually competing against them and not really realizing that you're not competing on an even competition. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about marriage, about arguing. How much arguing in a marriage is normal and healthy? And I think this needs to be addressed because I think for everybody out there that's married, you have a tendency of wondering if your marriage is good. Are you comparing your marriage to other people? And I think a lot of times we compare ourselves to other couples that we know, but we compare ourselves to their public persona. We don't compare themselves to us or to them to behind closed doors. And I think in order for us to honestly make an honest comparison, you would actually have to see what happens behind closed doors. And I don't think that's going to be an option for you when it comes to other people and couples. And I think a lot of times we compare ourselves to that public persona. We wonder, are we normal? Is our relationship normal? Do we look as good as they do in public? Are we as good of a couple? Are we gelling? Are we sexy together? You know, you always see that on social media. People go, oh, you're the best looking couple. You're like, are we a good looking couple? Huh. Do we gel? Interesting. And I think a lot of times we put a lot of energy and power on pictures when in reality, a picture can be changed. A picture could be set up for. You can actually sit there and pose for a picture. And life is not about posing, right? Life is about living. And I've been reading a lot of articles variously here and there on couples and arguing and rowing and fighting. And it was interesting because the head of home insurance for Esure, Nikki Sellers, had a survey that they did, and the fact is that they found out that the fact of the matter is that what bickering on a daily basis is all part of being in a normal, healthy relationship. Unfortunately, some of the researchers actually suggested that their people are rowing close to 7 times a day. And although this can be over small stuff, this kind of seems like a lot. This kind of seems like a lot to me. And I think it's interesting, though, because we talked about right before the break about cohabitating versus marriage. And I think a lot of times we have these arguments because we are cohabitating. It's not necessarily because we're, you know, arguing with our wife or our husband, but we're arguing with the person that's right there. And I think it's human nature to sometimes do that. I think it's human nature to argue. And I think it's interesting because a lot of times we argue with our spouses over some of the smallest things, but some of the biggest things as well. I mean, what about money? What about overspending and the bills? And this can be a very stressful spot. And this can be a very stressful spot because money can be overwhelming. When you're looking around, you're going, oh my gosh, I don't know if we have enough money to afford this. How much longer are we going to stay afloat? You know, some of you waiting till the first going, okay, I hopefully there won't be any bills that come up until the first and then I can float these and I can pay the minimum on that. And you start getting all stressed out about it because that's the way life is. And I think for some of us, we have to realize that maybe the money is obviously a big deal. But I think an argument about money might be the least of worries when it comes to an actual happy couple. Think about it. Because I figured out, if it's just about money, it's kind of like these worldly issues here. It's not about the love between you and them. It's not about your compatibility. It's about a financial issue. It's about a real thing. And it's about a real thing in this universe. It's about a real thing about being able to live and buy things and be able to provide. And I think that, to me, even though it can seem like one of the biggest arguments, might not be the biggest argument. You know, so I was looking out over some of the conceptual values that people have talked about and talked about the lovers' tiffs that they have among couples. And some of the main causes of arguments is not listening. And that's one of the biggest ones. Overspending and money, laziness, snoring, bills. What are you going to eat for dinner? I know that a lot of us argue that a lot, too. Think about it. When was the last time you're like, well, I don't know. What do you want? Well, I don't know. What do you want? Well, I don't know. Well, somebody's got to come up with a decision. I'm not going to just sit here in this car and wait to figure out where we're going to go drive to eat. Or better yet, you're at the grocery store trying to figure out something. Or your spouse calls you to see what you want them to pick up. And I don't know. I don't really know what I'm looking. I don't really know what I'm in the mood for. Not really sure. Well, figure it out. I mean, how many arguments have you had about that? What about driving too fast? I've gotten yelled out for driving too fast. I've gotten yelled out for driving too fast before, and I know that some of y'all out there have too. Yeah, I've done it. I've done it when I thought my spouse was asleep. When we're driving to my relative's house, and we're driving out there, and I love to drive. I'm a driver. I'm a winner. Things are going to change. I can feel it. You know, I'm a driver. Okay, and I like to drive. It helps to clear my head, and I like it. And so, normally when Greg goes to sleep by a certain point, he'll normally go to sleep, I'd say probably about an hour into the drive. Yep, about an hour into the drive, and that's when Ashley comes alive at the wheel. And I've had it before where everything's just fine. Everything's peachy clean. You're making good time. You're doing well. You got a little group of cars that y'all are hanging out together, driving together. Going way over the speed limit and feeling good because you're in a pack, you know, and I'm one of those kind of people. I'm always looking over every hill and every mountain. So I got that thing going on. So I know that I got that vision. And then you got somebody watching from behind and somebody over on the side and you got all this and you're like, yes, we're going to make some good time. Now, what good time means, I don't know. I think it's just like the driver's mentality. You know, you got to have something to keep fighting for. You have to have something to keep winning, you know? It's like when we were kids and you played that game I Spy. What the heck were we thinking of playing with I Spy? It was one of the most boring games ever. You could I Spy something for an hour and a half. However, I remember being in the car, though. There I am, and I'm kind of putting the pedal to the metal. And all of a sudden, we've all been there before, where the spouse wakes up and looks at you, and you are hauling down the highway. And they're like, slow down! What are you doing? Scares the living crap out of you. You freak out, you jump, and then you argue back. Why are you yelling at me? Or driving when someone pulls out at you, someone pulls out, almost hits you, and instead of your spouse yelling at them, they yell at you. You go, wait a second, I didn't do anything. They pulled out at me, and we've all been there before where that argument goes. That argument only goes south pretty quick. And it normally has a lot of people with the stress level high, hearts palpitating, angry. You go back with a snide comment, they come back and you go, I can't even believe you take their side. And that's such a couple's thing too, because you would never do that with a friend. I mean, maybe some of y'all do. I mean, y'all, how do y'all take care of your friends, man? I mean, how you do your friends? But you know what I'm saying? I have friends that, crazy stuff. But with a friend, you normally go, man, did you see that? I can't believe that person almost pulled out on us. You did good by making sure we didn't die. But with your spouse, you're over there like, honey, you had something to do with this. We want to blame our spouse for everything. We want to blame our spouse because it's convenient. We want to blame our spouse because we got used to it. We got used to it because of the drama. And I kind of wonder sometimes nowadays, too, because of reality TV. Is reality TV teaching us and teaching our younger, the younger generation that arguing and fighting and fussing in public is an okay thing? And I think it kind of is. I think it kind of is, and I want to talk about that in just a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit more about lovers' tips. What about the dirty house? House needs to be cleaned. House needs to be organized. And one of the biggest arguments I hear in my practice is when one person, when spouses come in together for spousals and couples therapy, and one spouse says, well, I work all day, and she doesn't, and I get home, and the house is a mess. She's got one thing to do. And that's one of the biggest arguments. What about what to watch on TV? What to watch on TV? That's a rip-roaring argument right there. I try not to watch that much TV. And when I do, I try to use a DVR. I work at not just sitting through all the commercials. But on top of that, you have to have a consensus. It can't just be one person dictates all the TV all the time. And I think we find ourselves in those situations a lot where one person becomes the TV dictator. One person has like that remote in their hand at all times. It's like, are you using that as a cane or some sort of life device? I mean, because I thought that was I thought that was community property, the remote. And what about, you know, disciplining the children? So if you are disciplining the children and one of the spouses doesn't believe that's good, if your wife is not happy with the way that you're disciplining the child, there's going to be an argument. There's going to be a fight. There's going to be a fuss. There's going to be a riot. There's going to be fisticuffs. And think about it. I think a lot of it is cohabitating. I think a lot of it is cohabitating because you're around somebody a lot and that's going to happen. But I also think that sometimes we bicker and fight with our spouses more because of the drama. But we do it because we feel like it's okay. So stay tuned. When we return, we're going to be talking more about why we fight and how much arguing in a marriage is normal and how much of it is healthy. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight I'm talking about arguing in marriage. How much arguing in a marriage is normal, and how much is healthy? You know, I think a lot of times we define ourselves based on the other couples that we know, and we actually kind of compare ourselves, compare and contrast ourselves with our couple friends and how they act together in public. I mean, when was the last time you were with one of your friends and y'all are couples and you double date or whatever, and they act a certain way in public and you start comparing yourself and wondering if your marriage is actually that good? Do you have a good beat on things, or is your marriage not very good? And so we wonder if we're normal. We wonder if we can compete. We wonder if we have a good marriage. We look at other people's Instagram pictures and their social media pictures and their holiday photos, and we make judgment calls based on those pictures on our own relationship. And for why, I don't know. It's like we're making our lives exceedingly difficult based on something we don't even know is reality. I think the next thing that we find ourselves in is that we are competing with the unknown. We compete and we work to stay at a certain level, but is that for a public persona or in private? And I think it's interesting to figure out what are we actually arguing about as a couple? And I talked about that earlier in the last couple of segments, is the top main causes of arguments. The first one was not listening. You don't listen to me. You don't listen to me. And I don't know how many times I've heard that, and I've said that myself. Overspending money, laziness, you know, snoring. Doggone it, honey, be quiet. Stop snoring. Oh, my God. I mean, for all you that wear earplugs out there, you get it. You realize that arguing and fighting for someone that snores is not going to work. Maybe they can change their diet. Maybe they can slow down on the drinking before dinner. Maybe they can eat less before dinner or before going to bed, which allows them not snore so much because of that, you know, that fatty palate is not snoring. It could be genetic and it could be sleep apnea, but yelling at it's not going to create anything good. It's like having a spouse who's overweight, and instead of saying, honey, let me help you in any way, let's still go out in the gym, let's start working out, let's start bettering our health and our diet. Instead of doing that, you just yell at them, you're fat, you're overweight, you're never going to lose weight, you're never going to lose weight, you're never going to look like how you look when we first got married. That's not going to help. I've had lots of couples come into my office where that's the way it was going, and I'm telling you, the spouse just ate more. And the stress level as well. Because cortisol is a component of stress. And when you stress a lot, you gain weight too, because it causes weight gain. It causes bloating. And so in order to deal with a situation, fighting is normally not necessarily the right way to do it, but we have a tendency of falling into that category. What about driving too fast? Bills. I mean, think about it. What about like watching TV? What are you going to watch? Disciplining the children. What about dirty dishes left out in the sink when somebody could have taken care of it? Some of these issues, though, remind me of an argument even between somebody that you're just sharing a place with, a roommate. I mean, because this would be roommate issues, too, because the whole idea of, you know, dirty dishes, of doing laundry, that kind of thing. I mean, as far as a marriage is concerned, what about when to have sex? When is a good time to have sex? Taking each other for granted? That's a big one. When was the last time you had an argument about one of you taking each other for granted, and how did that turn out? How did that work? So I want to talk more about the deep arguments, because I think that a lot of people listening to my show are deep, authentic people that want more answers and less questions. And so let's dive into that right now. What are we truly arguing about when we're having these arguments? And I think the first one, the biggest one, is freedom. I think we all like being in a relationship, but I think that a lot of people like the concept of having freedom, meaning that they're not like, it's not like a free marriage, not like an open marriage, but free to do what they want to do sometimes. And I think this is where the arguments come in a lot, is when someone wants to do something and the spouse doesn't want to do it and the other person feels like they're stuck. Well, I'm just going to live the rest of my life out. The good years of my life are just passing me by. I'd like to go see that concert. I'd like to go to that festival. I'd like to do that, but instead I'm going to sit on the couch and watch this movie that my spouse wants to watch. And I think freedom is so important when it comes to marriage. I think freedom is so important because I think freedom helps to dissolve some of the bickering and arguing. Because I think a lot of times the reason why we argue is because we're under each other's like thumb so much. Think about it. Think about it. Like a lot of times when you're out of town and they're out of town and you've been out of town a lot and your schedules haven't been gelling, you probably don't argue that much because you haven't been around each other. And so sometimes we allow people the freedom to do some of the things they want to do. It allows them to come back in the relationship and feel good. They don't feel bound down. They don't feel smothered. Because anybody that feels smothered or feels tied down doesn't feel like they have freedom, and they'll come out fighting. And I think that's one of the big issues in today's society, in today's marriage, is offering your spouse just the right amount of freedom to allow them to live their life and to not be resentful of you. And I'm not out here proponing the whole concept of open marriage. If you want to go that far, then so be it. But I am saying that I think that we have to look at the fact that we all are owed a level of freedom. Nobody owns each other. Nobody's in charge of one another. Everybody's an independent soul individual. And when you think about that and you keep that in mind, a level of freedom is essential. A level of freedom to know that I can go and do what I want to within certain, you know, restrictions. Instead of knowing that somebody's going to be calling me up, asking me where I am and what I'm doing every 10 minutes. And that is a problem waiting to happen. If you are in a marriage right now that is causing issues as far as you don't feel like you have freedom and the arguments are coming from both sides and you feel like you are stagnating, that you are being sucked down, you've got to really realize and talk about this with your marriage and figure out with your spouse what you can do. Because when people don't let their spouse live a life, it becomes a problem. And a lot of times these relationships end in divorce because people don't know what to do anymore. Because if you don't feel like you have freedom, what are you living for? You have to have the ability to love the fact that you're together and to have time apart. That time apart allows for the time together to be good. Because we don't take people for granted as much. If you're around somebody 24/7, you're probably going to take them for granted. If you're around somebody 24/7, you're probably already taking them for granted. And you know what? You're probably already fighting because somebody's fighting about the fact that you're already taking them for granted. Conversation over. We figured that one out. That's how the argument happens. That's how the circular logic takes place. You have argument, boom. Then that happens. So you take them for granted because you're around them too much. You're around them too much because you don't have any freedom. You don't have any freedom. You don't know how to deal with that. So you don't know how to start the conversation. So the argument happens. Are you really arguing about that or are you arguing about the freedom? Why don't you argue about what really matters? Why don't you discuss what truly matters? Because I think freedom is a top thing in a relationship. If you have freedom in a relationship, then you're doing good. If you feel stagnant and you feel being like you're held down, and you have to do what this person wants you to do, it's not a healthy relationship. You're going to eventually revolt against the system, and it's not going to be something small that you revolt doing. You're going to revolt in a big, huge way. And that huge way is going to cause lots of waves and lots of problems. And you hope you get out of it unscathed. I don't know if you'll get out of it without a divorce, but hopefully you'll get out of it unscathed and you move on. However, that's almost like a kid acting up. It's almost like a kid acting up because their parents' curfew is too tight. I remember when I was a kid and I was in high school, and my senior year, I had prom. You know, I went to lots of proms prior before, but I went to my own prom. And I think my curfew was 10:30. Like, the prom party at the actual prom place had not even ended yet. And I remember my date ended up going out without me. And I went home. And I'm like, holy hand grenade, Superman. And I think that's why I revolted when I got to college. Just because I had never had any freedom. I had never had any freedom. And because I had never had any freedom, I wanted to do as much as I could and fit it into all this stuff as much as I could. End of story. And instead of really weighing out the pros and cons, I didn't care. I mean, I was one of those kids that never drank in high school. And for all you out there that did drink in high school and your mom or dad let you do it, you kind of had more of that laissez-faire thing when you went to college. Like, there wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, yeah, you could drink, but you've already been drinking. I mean, so what's the big deal now? You know what I'm saying? If you were smoking cigarettes and you were already smoking cigarettes in high school occasionally, what's the big deal? You go to college, you can smoke cigarettes. It's no big deal. And I think, though, when you were held back and you didn't have freedom, you just went, you know, haywire. And think about that. When you were a kid and you were leaving from high school to college and that happened, and for some of y'all that happened in high school and you just went against the, you went and raged against the machine, you raged against the family, and you went crazy. And you went crazy because you didn't have any freedom. And that's one of the biggest things I think is in the way of either having a good relationship or a relationship that's doomed. Is because when your spouse is fighting you for freedom, that's not a good look. That's not a good look. And freedom is inherently important because if somebody is free to do what they want to do, they're free to choose that they don't want to do it. It's only when they're not free to make a choice that they want to make the opposite choice of what's right. And I think for the most part, we can agree to that because we've seen it happen time and time and again. Whether it was with our own lives or our children's lives or our spouse's lives or our family or friends' lives. When people don't feel like they're free, they do crazy things. And so I think if we can work on that freedom quotient in a marriage, we can get past a lot of the bickering because we get past the taking for granted. We get past the always there on your nerves kind of thing. We get past some of the small bickering because it doesn't really matter because you don't bring it up anymore. Because I think a lot of the small bickering is really based on the fact that you don't have freedom, that you feel like your freedom's been taken away. And I think freedom is the biggest argument we have because that's the one thing that really helps us be growing as individuals, not just in a relationship, but to be growing and to feel good about our relationship. When we return, we're going to talk about the other three things that we argue about in a relationship and how to understand how the argument starts. So stay tuned when we return. We'll be talking more about marriage and arguments and what's healthy and what's normal. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we've been talking about arguing, marriage, fights, fusses, and how much fighting and how much argument is healthy. And I think a lot of us don't really realize what's healthy because we don't really know what kind of arguing other people do. And I think a lot of times we kind of guess ourselves out of the equation in the fact that we feel that everybody else has a better marriage than we do. We wonder what other people argue about, and we worry that we don't have a good marriage. We worry that we might be arguing way more than we should. And I think a lot of times we wonder about life. We wonder if we're on the right track. Is our marriage good? Is this going to work out? And, you know, because we always compete a lot of times unknowingly or subconsciously or consciously with other couples, we have a tendency of competing with their public persona. And that public persona could be the best. They could be like the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. They could be so awesome, the best couple in the world. They could be so awesome when our relationship looks like it's falling to hell in a handbasket. So I think a lot of times we don't know, we compete against the unknown, and this becomes a problem. and we compete against things that we really can't compete against. And so we've been talking about what we actually argue about, and I think one of the biggest things is freedom. Freedom. And I think that's where a lot of the petty arguments come from. I think if you really get down to the nitty-gritty, and you look at some of the arguments I was talking about in the first segment, a lot of these are kind of tiny. And I think if we were allowed to have some sort of personal freedom, a lot of these wouldn't be happening. And like I talked about, when I left high school and went to college, I didn't have any freedom as a kid. My dad was extremely strict. Strict. Okay. And I remember when I graduated, when we had our prom, I had to be home at 10:30. Yeah. That's strict. Okay, so a lot of you can't compete anymore. Ha ha. No, seriously. I know what it is. I know how it is to be in a strict family. I've been there. But when I went to college, I lost it. You know, I lost my dean's scholarship within the first year because I was out partying all the time. I was doing keg stands. I was going cray-cray. I wasn't making classes. Why? Because I was the perfect child in high school with no freedom. And all of a sudden, I got out from underneath the thumb of my father, and I was able to move on. However, that might have screwed up my life for a little bit, but it didn't in the long run. But some of us deal with that in our own marriages. Well, we're grown adults. Grown adults with not one bit of freedom. Grown adults without any ability to have any freedom or choice about where you want to do tonight. I mean, we should be able to choose if we want to go hang out with our friends or we want to hang out with our spouses. And some of us don't even have that option. Some of us would never get that option in a million years. Some of our spouses are currently probably, you know, making sure that you're going to spend every waking minute with them. And that can only be so healthy. I mean, because we have to have some sort of movement. We have to have some time to ourselves. That allows us to be healthy. That allows us to be normal. That allows us to be sane. And so with that in mind, I think one of the biggest issues we argue about is freedom. I think the second biggest thing we argue about is money. Because I think freedom is such a big deal, but I think money is always second. No matter how great your relationship is, even if you have a lot of freedom, money is a constant. And I think that's interesting because money can get to anybody's relationship. Money can take one of the best relationships and cause it problems. Now, what level of problems does it cause, though? Because it's kind of a different type of problem. Because if the problem is more about, like, I hate you, you're a bad person, that's a totally different level of problem. If the problem is you don't understand me, you don't care, you jump to conclusions, I don't feel like my opinion is valued at all here, that could be a problem. But money is a problem about mobility, about means, about buying stuff, about affording things. And this can get in the way a lot when we're trying to live our life because money's a big part of it. Money is a big part of it. And sadly enough, money can get in the way of happiness a lot. We have to sit there and realize, when is this a normal argument? Or when is this an argument about money? Okay? And I think that's one of the first things we can do to alleviate some of the pain about arguing over money, because we're able to put it in its perspective. Are we arguing with this over money? Are we arguing with this over XYZ? And I think that needs to be addressed. And I think that money is one of those things that when you can't pay your bills, it stresses you out. When you can't make bills or payments or mortgages, it gets to you. It's the stuff that keeps you up at night. And this is a problem that we as married people have to deal with. Balancing a budget and trying to figure that out. And that's where a lot of arguments can come from. But I think once you try to get a handle on things, try to work through things, try to understand things, try to get a realistic approach to what's going on, is when you can actually wrap your brain around it and make something happen. The third biggest thing that people argue about is their children. What's good for the children? What should the children be doing? What are the children allowed to have? Are they allowed to have a phone? Or are they not allowed to have a phone? How late is the child allowed to stay up? And I think that the parenting skills across the board might not always be unified. And because of this, arguments will ensue. How you raise your children can be a very big argument. People have broken up relationships based on the way that people raise their kids. So how do we deal with those types of arguments? We have to look at them for what they are. We have to look at them for the reality that they are, because the children, you have the children, the part of the relationship, and eventually you have to see eye to eye, or you have to explain your reasoning. You have to explain your reasoning. I think the last thing that people argue about, or one of the other things, is just about anything and everything. Petty arguments is where this goes. The arguments about the tiny things that just get under your skin. I normally see people arguing about crazy stuff like this in the airport. Any sort of delay on a plane can bring the worst doubt in any spouse. I've seen couples literally throw down over a delayed flight. And we have to sit there, I think, in these situations and look at our spouse more like a friend than as a spouse and hold back a little bit. Because I don't think you'd be going crazy on your friend at the airport. You might get a little upset. You might make a little comment. So you might go to the bar. But you're not going to sit there and go off on your friend because the airline is late again. And I think a lot of times we take our spouses for granted. Hence why we yell at them. And sometimes we yell at them because we don't have freedom. And other times it could be because we're always there. So let's talk about what starts the argument. Because I think this is important. Because when we're able to figure out what actually starts the argument, we're able to understand how to stop it. We're able to understand how not to get into it. So can you tell the difference between arguing with your spouse, or arguing with yourself in the guise that your spouse is the problem? Can you tell the difference between arguing with your spouse or arguing with yourself in the guise that your spouse is the problem? Let me give you a couple of examples here, because this is going to help your marriage 100%. When we start realizing that a lot of times we're arguing with ourselves, however we're arguing out loud toward our spouse, we can begin to curtail a lot of arguments we have. A good example is that you're swinging for the fences for your career. You swung for the fences, you quit your job, you took on something big that you believe that you could do, a lifelong dream, and things aren't going the way you had hoped. You're stressed out, you're really upset, you're stressed out, and you're stressed out about the leap and about the money issues. And when your spouse brings up a recent credit card bill, and not in an argumentative way, just bringing up, have you paid it, you fly off the handle. You fly off the handle because you're stressed out. You fly off the handle because all you can think about is that credit card bill when you wake up and when you go to bed. And my advice to you is to realize that this is an internal argument. And then if you want to deal with this, you need to talk with your spouse and let them know how stressed out you truly are. Because I think together you can come up with a system, you can come up with a middle ground, or you can see a solution that you couldn't see on your own. However, it's easier to explain to them where you're coming from, so they don't just think that you're not taking things seriously. And I think it's funny, because in that situation, we are arguing with ourselves because we're so stressed out, we don't even hear what they're saying. You know, think about this. You invest in a friend's project, and it goes south, and you lose your money on the investment. And maybe your spouse says something to you randomly about maybe your personal investment, about how maybe you should have invested in yourself or in education, and you take it personally, and it really didn't have anything to do with it. And I think a lot of times the arguments we have with our spouse are based upon our own situation. For example, if we're arguing over some sort of degree of freedom, we're angry because we haven't stood up for our own personal freedom in the relationship. We're angry that we're letting someone we feel walk all over us, and we're not telling them how we really feel. And in that case, you're really arguing with an internal argument with yourself. You're internally arguing by not stepping up to the plate for yourself and not caring enough about yourself. And so instead of letting it escalate, instead of letting it get out of control, remember that a lot of these arguments start within. You know, remember that you are your spouse's and should be your spouse's best friend and vice versa. And y'all need to treat each other like that instead of cohabitation and cohabiting as far as just dealing with that situation. And realize that in situations like that, being a friend is awesome. And treat them like your best friend. Stay tuned. We got a great show for you next in Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in three shakes.
You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, we're talking about life's little cues. You know, life's cues, life's little cues are the signals, the indication, the prompts, the reminders that we're in the right place at the right time. Even better yet, it reminds us to be aware of the bigger picture. You know, when we're able to see life's amazing, intricate cues, we're able to relish in life even more than we already do. You know, I think it's interesting because recently, in the last few years, I've really been paying attention to life's cues. I pay attention to the signals. I pay attention to things because you know what? I absolutely love it. It makes life even that much more interesting. You know, not until you realize these signals, these prompts, you don't really realize how intricate life is, how you're supposed to have met somebody, how that it was destined, it was foretell. Things were already figured out. Things that you're not even aware of have already come into play. You know, and I think it's interesting when we have these revelations, and I think we can have these revelations on a daily basis. I mean, I think a lot of times when we're in the right place, doing the right thing in the right time, in our space, being within ourselves, consciously aware of who we are and what's going on around us, we're able to immediately see life's cues. You know, recently, just a couple of days ago, I was able to actually do some media press coverage with the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama was visiting one of the states that we broadcast from, and it was absolutely amazing. And it was interesting to listen to him. And it was very, very neat and very interesting. But in the beginning of the morning, we had to get there way earlier than when the event started. And that's just the way media is. Media, you got to get there early. They got to do a lot of checks. And especially when you're dealing with the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama, President Bush, the last President Bush, President Bush II, George W., and all those people within the show. So it was a really amazing deal, but there's a lot of security to go through. So you get there about 9 and you basically wait till about 1:45 in the afternoon. And in that process, I picked up somebody that's working with me. He's actually interning with me right now. And it's amazing because it's awesome when you get to work with certain people because they get you. And he's one of those people that totally understands me. And he's interning with me and he's starting college in the fall. And it's really interesting because a lot of people are like, wow, Ashley, could you find any younger interns? And I'm like, you know what? I'm just finding people that understand me and how I consciously live. And so there we are. We met up and we're on the way to the event. And as we approach the event, we go to, I pick a certain specific actual parking garage. And we go there. And as we pull up to the front, there's a gentleman out there and another gentleman out there that actually works the parking garage security over at one of the radio stations that one of our shows is on. And I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, Ashley Burgess, how you doing? And we started talking, we laughing, and you know, handshaking, gave him a hug. And I was like, man, this is awesome. They don't even work anywhere near here. And I mean, it was obviously in the same city, but on the other side of town, in a totally different place. And that's amazing. And he's like, this is awesome. What are you here for? And I told him the Dalai Lama. He's like, you're kind of a little bit early. I was like, yeah, they want us here early for security. They're going to have the bomb sniffing dogs, that kind of sort of thing. So we got to have our equipment in there and then wait it out. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. He told me exactly where to park. And I did. Greatest spot in the house. So there we are. We cruise into the Coliseum, bring all our equipment, meet a bunch of people there that were involved with the organization and with the event. And then we headed over to eat while we waited for 2 hours while they were clearing the building. And it was really interesting. Titan and I were talking. He's my intern. And we were talking about life. And he was talking about a book by the Dalai Lama that he really respects. I believe it's The Art of Happiness. And so he was showing me the book and we were looking through it. And it was really amazing. And I get a call midway through. And it's another cue. It's a friend of mine, Bill, and he's telling me about this and that. And he starts going on about the Dalai Lama because I had said that I was going to be there for media. And he talks about a friend of his that goes to the same church as he does that actually photographed and spent 2 years of time with the Dalai Lama himself. And I was like, that's amazing. I was like, how long have you known this guy? He's like, oh, 10, 12 years. I was like, and it's just now coming up. But I realized this is the right timing. And so cues are a very interesting thing. And we're going to talk more about the specific cues that took place. But let's focus on that first cue. Let's focus on the first one because I think that one's intricate. I think that one's a signpost. And for everybody that's listening tonight, you've had these signposts, and a lot of people, we have a tendency of overlooking them. We don't see the significance. We don't see how amazing it is to have this happen. And when we're living life truly, we're able to see the synchronicity of life. And I explain this to a lot of my patients and clients, that when we're dealing with a lot of stress and anger and depression and being overwhelmed, it's hard to see the forest through the trees. It's almost impossible. And a lot of that is because we see it as impossible. A lot of that is because we're being weighed down by negativity and things that actually create problematic situations, i.e., we can't see. We're stuck. We're dealing with this stuff. We're stuck in the minutia, and we can't see it. And I've been there before, years and years and years ago, when my health was at its worst. And I didn't see the forest for the trees, and sometimes I didn't want to get out of bed because it didn't make any sense. It's going to be the same kind of day. Nothing's going to change. And I'm still going to be in pain. And the doctors still aren't going to know what's going on. And I'm going to live this for another how many years of my life? And that's a really bad way of looking at it. But I know there's some people out there listening right now that say, Ashley, I'm in that boat right now. I'm there right now. And you know, my advice to you at this point is this. The mindset we have is so important. And I'm not just saying, oh, all rainbows and unicorns and all this good stuff. No, I'm not saying that. But I am saying when we're actually logically realizing that there's more to life than meets the eye, we can open our mind to a more positive state. We can also allow ourselves to see life in a more elegant form. And what I'm saying here is this. When we're not seeing things, when we're not achieving our cues and seeing synchronicity, it's just kind of like we're missing a lot of stuff. It's like getting the baby's breath in a flower arrangement, but missing out on the roses. I just came up with that. I thought that was pretty good. Seriously, it's like seeing the weeds in the front yard and not seeing the thick green grass and just saying, okay, well, those weeds, that'll do. That's as good as my life's going to be anyway. I mean, I might as well not ask for much because I got all these other issues going and I'm lucky to be alive. And yes, you are lucky to be alive, but there's so much more. And once we start to grasp that, that's when our whole life changes. And I started realizing cues and synchronicity probably about 10 years ago, but recently even more in the last 4 years. And in the last 4 years, I've had an intensity of synchronicity that I even might find it difficult to explain. You can see the intricacies in life based on everybody you walk into, everybody you come into contact with, everybody you see, everything you do, the timing you get there, the timing of other people leaving. I mean, everything is down to the incremental second. And it's interesting when we get to places where we're supposed to be at on time and we make where we need to go at that exact moment, we create this synchronicity, this union with time. We create this union with our ability to see things more clearly, to see things more impressive, to see things more beautiful. And you know, it's awesome because in this last situation that just took place a couple of days ago, and this happens every day, by the way, it's not just a special occasion. When we put ourselves into a situation, when we have pure intent, is when the cues show up and the synchronicity presents itself. When we have pure intent, we were able to understand life. We're able to see things the way that they are supposed to be seen. We're able to see nature as nature is. We're able to see things in the flowers and the blooming and the plants and the animals just as they are. And it's not until we see that that we realize that life is really, really cool. It's like awesome, dude. It's so cool because we're able to see all the things that we didn't even know existed. Because a lot of times we see things kind of finitely. We see things, okay, well, this is, I got to show up to work and I got to get here and I got to do that and I got to show up and I got to do this and I got to do that. I got to meet these people and I got to do all this stuff in my life and I got to do that. Oh my gosh, I can't do all this. Ah! I'm completely spread so thin. I have 4 meetings back to back to back. I have 8 meetings back to back to back. I got to leave work at 7 p.m. I got to go pick up the kids at the babysitter. I got to get home. I got to make some food. When is this ever going to change? Calgon, take me away. Oh. And I know that a lot of us have a busy lives. But once we're able to step back from being busy, from that busyness, and realize that we can still have some amazing situations based around our authentic life and being there with intent, it shines a great light. So stay tuned when we return. We'll be talking more about these life cues, how to begin to recognize your life cues and how amazing they make life. By the way, I know tonight is July 4th. I realize there will be some amazing fireworks shows. And I just ask one thing of you. Please remember to bring your pets in prior to the fireworks displays. You know that animals have keener ears than we. And because of that, we must be aware that animals get frightened by the loud sounds of fireworks. And to ensure their safety, please bring them inside so that that sound is muffled. Thank you so much. When we return, we'll be talking more about those cues and perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in 2 shakes.
Up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, we're talking about being aware of life's cues. And life's cues are kind of like those things that are indicators. They're signals. They're the signs. I see the sign. I opened up my eyes and see the sign. It's the signs in life that show us that we're on the right path. It's those signs in life that explain to us that we are doing what we need to be doing and in the right place at the right time. It's amazing when we're at the right place at the right time because you can feel it. You can feel the energy. You can feel the drive. You know what's going on and you go, you know what? Hot diggity. Hot diggity, Ashley. I'm in the right place at the right time. And I'm feeling good. I'm fancy free. And you feel good about where you are. And you feel good about being you. And that's part of it. And that's totally, totally part of it. So let's talk about this. The other day, I was heading to hear the Dalai Lama speak. I was heading to hear the Dalai Lama speak, which is so, so awesome. And I'm heading there, actually, with an intern that's working with me. His name's Titan. And so Titan and I are heading there. And, you know, it's a long morning because we have to get there for security detail and what have you. And so there's a long process. You got to get there. You got to bring your equipment. You got to drop it off. You got to let them bomb sniff. It had the dogs come in and bomb sniff for it. You got to wait it out. Then you sit there and you wait several hours and hours and hours until it's time. That's just the way it is for some media. That's just the way a lot of media stuff is. The bigger the person, the longer you wait. Okay, I figure that out in life sometimes. And that's always not always true. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky in this industry and you go, oh, hot diggity. Well, this time you had George Bush. You had GW, second Bush, and you had the Dalai Lama, so you know what, you weren't going to get lucky on that security detail. But you know what, it really didn't matter. At first, you know, we were kind of like, oh gosh, look at how long it's going to be. It's going to be forever. However, things change. And it's funny, so we ended up showing up into a parking garage, and you could have picked one of 3 parking garages, and I picked one of them. And I picked one, and I went the back way to get there, and as I show up, one of the gentlemen that's running, the 2 gentlemen actually in front, that are doing security for the parking garage. I know them, and they don't even work there. They work somewhere totally and completely different. And it was so awesome seeing them, and they were so happy to see me. Ashley Burgess, how you doing? I was like, what's up? And, you know, one of them, I give a hug. One, we shake hands. We talk. Great people. Always ask them about their family and their kids. And they're like, hey, Ashley, go in a park on this level. It'll take care of it. You can walk right out. You're good to go. They were so right. Best spot in the house. So we take the equipment in, we meet everybody there in the security detail. I get to see about 20 or 25 sheriff's department and all that stuff as well, which is pretty cool. And we take our stuff in there, and we're supposed to leave the building. So the building has to be completely empty of people, except for the dogs and the FBI or the type of security detail. And so Titan and I went over to a Cafe Express to sit and talk. And it was interesting because when he came by my house early that morning, he mentioned that he knew somebody that lived in my building. And I said, really? And he told me, because my dad actually works with her occasionally, and I know this person. I know this person very well. I've known her for 6+ years. I've actually had her on the show before. And I said, wow, that's amazing that y'all know each other. And that's how we left it. And so, you know, we get to the security place, we put our stuff down, we leave the Coliseum, we head to the Cafe Express, and he shows me his favorite book, his favorite Dalai Lama book, and we talk for a little while. And all of a sudden, the phone rings. And it's a friend of mine, Bill. And Bill's a great friend of mine. We've known each other for years. We've gone on our ups and downs together, and we know each other's wild sides, and we know each other, like, conforming and getting back to reality. We've all been there before. And so, you know, Bill calls me up on the phone, and we talk for a second. And I told him about the Dalai Lama, and he goes, oh, my gosh. He goes, you know what? A friend of mine, a guy that goes to church with me, actually spent almost 2 years of time with the Dalai Lama photographing his memoirs for 2+ years. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I'm going to be in contact with that person here soon, which is very interesting that that came up. And that tidbit of information would not have come up had I not been talking about the Dalai Lama. Okay, so there we are. We're back at the Cafe Express. Titan and I are talking, and we have a deep, deep, deep conscious level conversation. And what we were talking about is something that's very near and dear to my heart. And if I would have had a chance to ask a personal question of the Lama, I would have asked him this. However, I have answers, and I know that I don't always have all the answers, but I know I have some good ideas. Because that's really what it's about, right? It's not always about a doctrine. It's about having good ideas, because you can always change an idea. So, you know, I was going to ask him if I would have. I would have stood up in front of those thousands and thousands of people and said, you know, I've been working on one thing. And the one thing I've been working on, besides all my work and besides the radio shows and besides broadcasting and producing and creation and all that stuff and clients and therapy with my clients, I'm working on conscious level as far as being able to pass on from this dimension and leave consciously. Because I know that that's one of the biggest things that we can do in this lifetime. Because once we leave this lifetime, if we don't leave consciously, we don't leave consciously. And that's so important. And I wanted to ask him what kind of information, what kind of tips he could give those listeners out there in that Coliseum about how to actually make that happen, make that a reality. I didn't get that chance, but that's fine. I think eventually I will get that chance. You know, and so it's interesting. So there we are. We cruise back to the Coliseum, and we end up sitting in the car for about 45 minutes because there's nothing, you can't go inside and there's nowhere to go. So we sat in the car for about 45 minutes and we talked. And he said, you know that neighbor I asked you about? And I said, yeah. And he goes, we did this Christmas thing with her the last 2 years. And my neighbor does this thing where she goes to the neighboring hospitals, the children's hospitals, and collects bears throughout the year and gives them to the children in the cancer wings and in the hospitals of surrounding hospitals. And it's very interesting. Her and her husband dress up like Mr. and Mrs. Claus, Santa and Mrs. Claus. And they do this. And it's amazing. It's so amazing for the kids because the kids can actually feel as if, you know, gosh, the people care. It's Christmas time and people care. And I'm in a hospital. And so he said, yeah, I was there. I was there at an event that she had 2 Christmases ago. And I want to talk about that now, and I want to get Titan on the phone so we can discuss that, because I want you to understand the intricacies of this conversation and how amazing this is if you think about it. Because it's all about life, and we all have these situations, but sometimes we're not focusing. Sometimes we're not aware. Sometimes we don't allow ourselves to be aware. Sometimes we overlook some of the most amazing things because we just, We're too stressed out. We got too much going on. Life's too stressful. We don't really see it. But I want you tonight to begin to start seeing things, to begin to peel back the layers and layers of the onion of life and begin to see things the way to see them, the more brighter, the more brilliant way. And so right now I'm going to get Titan Page on the phone to illuminate about the story I was just telling you. Titan joins us on line one. Titan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. And I've been talking tonight about life's cues and how they really are the indication, the sign that we're in the right place at the right time. And so I've been talking about the concept that you knew my neighbor. You know my neighbor. Your dad works right with my neighbor, which is so cool. And
crazy, yep.
You were at the event, not this Christmas, but last Christmas. We were in the same room together, and now we're working together.
The same room. Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable.
I mean, isn't it wild how this connection is? I mean, being that we were obviously destined to meet at some point.
Right. I mean, we could have even said hi to each other and just not remember it. We talked to different people in that party, and so did you. We were out mingling. We just missed each other.
And, you know, I think it's interesting how we just miss each other. I do remember, though, I really do think that I saw you and your dad standing there. And I remember her introducing y'all. And
right.
I think that's so amazing. But we never talked. And it's funny how we would have never known that this had happened if we wouldn't have been in the right place at the right time and followed procedure today, because it would have never come out.
Exactly. And even though we were kind of complaining about the scheduling of the event today, it ended up resulting in us realizing that and kind of realizing that, hey, we're on the right path.
And that's what I think is so cool. And I think Titan explains that as well, is that it's not just me. He was actually aware of the situation. And even though we were kind of like, I can't believe it's taking so long, and I can't believe we're having to sit here and wait and go through all this, we were in the midst of an amazing situation. And if we were able to see the big picture like we were able to get the most out of the situation. So stay tuned when I return. I'll be talking more about synchronicity, more about how to find synchronicity, but better yet, yeah, how to find those cues in life and how you can begin to find those today, because you know what? It's going to make life so much more awesome. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Are you aware of life's cues? Are you aware of life's signs and signals and indicators that you're in the right place at the right time? More answers, less questions. Always on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. I like to say that a lot. I don't know. It's just something I like to say, but it's true. I like more answers and less questions, and that's what Perspectives is about, is helping you find your authentic self, helping you be able to not only find it, but be able to act from it, able to be it and feel good about being it. Isn't that what it's about? Isn't that what the whole concept of life is about? Is about being yourself? Isn't it? Don't we normally get ourselves into trouble in life without saying what we feel? Not being ourselves, not being honest, not being us, not being honest. And I think that when we are authentic in every way, shape, and form, guess what? We overcome the concept of trying to be different. We overcome the concept of trying to be somebody we're not. And instead, we are secure in our what? Our own skin. And when we are secure in our own skin, life opens up like a blooming flower. We are able to see life in such a way that it is just amazing. We're able to see all the intricacies of life that we would normally overlook, that we wouldn't see, that we'd be blinded to, blinded by the light. We would be blinded to it. So what do we do? And what are these cues? And right before the break, you know, I was talking to Titan, and Titan was right there in the conversation with me the other day when we were visiting and seeing the Dalai Lama. And we wouldn't have had that communication, that long conversation, and realized that we had been in the same room a year and a half ago prior to us meeting. We had been in the same room, not in a big room. We had been in someone's same apartment a year and a half ago. And it's interesting how Titan and I met. So let's go back to that. So one of my friends that I met back in December actually set Titan up with me as far as an intern because they had worked together. And that's intricate too because of the whole reasons how that person and I met. And that's interesting because let's go back to that real quick. Like the way that I met my friend that I'm talking about was random happenstance. We had gone on a trip because a mutual friend of ours wanted us to go on a trip. And we met in Vegas to go on a trip. And we all met there. And I met my friend Justin in a limo that night. And that person that asked everybody to come out to Vegas, that set up the limo, that did everything, that person no longer talks to anybody who went on the trip. And they stopped talking to us before we even left Vegas to go back home. And I was only there for 48 hours. And it's funny that the one person I met out of that whole situation was Justin. And Justin and I are now working together. And let's even go a step further. Justin introduced me to Titan. Titan was in my apartment complex a year and a half ago. And today, well, a few days ago, earlier this week, we were visiting and actually able to do a media background stuff for the Dalai Lama. And he's interning with me. These cues, this synchronicity in life, life's lotus, the flowers, this is what life is about. This is what life is about. We don't have to cover it. We don't have to lie about it. We don't have to do any of that. You know what we can do is just observe. And the only way to observe and then compute is to be logically authentic, to understand the human condition, to understand why we do what we do, and better yet, to feel good in our own skin. And in these three situations, being that I talked to my friend on the phone and his friend had spent 2+ years traveling with the Dalai Lama, to run into the gentleman running the parking garage, and to realize that my intern, Titan, and I had been in the same room a year and a half ago and are now working together. Those are cues. Those are indicators. Those are signals. Those are signs that say that you are where you need to be. And so right now, I want to begin discussing how you can see life's cues, how you can see life's indicators, because this is so important. Because when you're able to see it, your entire life changes. It changes for the absolute and utter better. So the first thing that we can do in order to begin to see life's cues is to know something. In order to see something that most people aren't aware of, in order to understand that something exists that most people are unaware of exists, what do you have to do? You have to know that it exists. Yep. You have to know that there's more to life than meets the eye. You know how they always say you got to read between the lines? Well, I think that's what you're doing right here, but you're not reading anything. You're seeing, you're being. You're seeing and being between the lines. And that's what's so amazing is that once you know that there's more to life than meets the eye, once you know that you can see life's cues, guess what? They jump out all around you. They jump out all around you. Because you know something. And that's like in life. You know, there's some people out there that say that they can see this or that, or that they've spoken to somebody that's passed on in their family. And if that's true for some people, that's fine. For some people, don't agree with that. But you know what? If you know something to be true, then there has to be a possibility or a probability that that exists. You know, there's those things that happen in our mind. Those things that we dream about and certain things that we ponder and certain things we meditate. And sometimes they might feel a little impossible, but are they really impossible? I sometimes think that the only things that are really impossible in our life are the things that we believe are impossible. You know, I remember, I think it was Alice in Wonderland, the remake, where they said, like, I like to believe in like 12 impossible things a day. I think that's something like it. But I don't think anything's impossible. I think the only thing that's impossible is what we deem impossible. And that's like I talked about earlier in the last segment, is that I believe that the idea of having some good ideas is better than having a doctrine, because you can always change an idea. You can always change an idea, make it into something else, explore new options, and realize by living life that there's more than meets the eye. And that, to me, is absolutely amazing. And I think when we begin to know, when we're able to know, first off and foremost, that yes, indeed, there is more to life than meets the eye, and I want to see it, you allow yourself to know something and you give yourself the option. So think about that. When you know something to be true, you allow your mind to open up. You allow your heart to open up and accept the fact that this is true. You might have to work with this a little bit because we've been taught a lot to not believe in things that we don't see. And I think a lot of people understand where I'm coming from when I talk about believing in things you don't see, because some people say, well, how can you believe in God if you can't see him? But other people say that the miracles of life are based on God. So you have to determine what you know. And once you know that there's more to life, there's magnificence, there's beauty, there's brilliance that you've never thought about. That's when you know that life is amazing. That's when you know, first and foremost, that you have a finger on the pulse. And you know what? If you continue to work with this knowledge, it will get more and more intense. You will begin to know more than you've ever known. You will be able to see more than you've ever seen. You will be able to help more people than you've ever been able to help. You will be able to learn more things than you've ever been able to learn. And your life will open up amazing. Your life will open up so amazing that you'll sometimes want to pinch yourself because you can't believe that life is so good. And I'm not saying that you might not have money problems. I'm not saying that all your money problems in the world are going to go away and everything's just going to be just easy breezy. You know, you're going to be, you know, dealing with, you know, unicorns and rainbows and lucky charms and leprechauns. There will be some issues that come to pass. However, in the grand scheme of things, even these issues won't be such a big deal. Even these issues will be put in a certain position, meaning that they won't hold as much stress or weight as they used to. And when we're able to see the big picture, we're able to look beyond stuff, and we're also able to create options, and we're being able to find ways around things that we didn't see before. And I think that's what's so important, is that when we're able to find this, and we're able to know that this exists, we're able to have the knowledge that there is more to life than meets the eye, we take life to another level. We take it to an absolute another level. When we return, we're going to be talking about more about how you can see life's cues, what you can begin to do tonight, tomorrow, next week, throughout the year, on how to see life's cues and how to position yourself in the right place at the right time. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and sound.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about being aware of life's cues. Being able to realize certain cues and certain options when you're dealing with life. Being able to realize synchronicity. Being in the moment. Being in the right place at the right time. We're able to realize all that. And right now, I've been talking about, in the last segment, I've been talking about how you can see and be aware of life's signals, life's cues. And you can be able to get to see the intricacies of life. And how life is a really brilliant, amazing, colorful organism that we sometimes take for granted because we don't realize there's more to life. And so the first thing that you can begin to do right now to see life's cues is to know that there is more to life than meets the eye. To know it, to believe it, to know it is true. When you know something is true, you act upon that. When you know something is true, you live by that. Think about it. If you know that you're a good person, and you know that you do the right thing, and you know that you are a quality person, you know you are. You don't put yourselves in situations where you beat yourself down. You don't let other people beat you down. You stand up for yourself. However, if you don't know something, you can fall trap into certain things. You can fall trap in this situation, if you don't know, to having a humdrum life, to feeling like life is kind of passing you by, to kind of feel beaten down by life, and there's nothing new ever happening. It's almost like looking at life as certain things where you go, well, there's nothing new on, there's nothing ever good on. Well, you know what? I'm here to tell you that if you know that there's always something good on, guess what? You'll see it. So first off, you always want to know that there's more to life than meets the eye. The second thing that you can do, the second key to you seeing life's intricacies, to life's cues, is to be aware of your surroundings. When we are aware of our surroundings, life gets pretty interesting. You know, because when we are aware of where we are and who we're around and what's going on around us and the situation and circumstances that are taking place, when we're able to be aware of that, we're able to better yet put ourselves in the right place at the right time. When we're aware of our surroundings, we're aware of possible issues. We're aware of possible conflicts. We're aware of possible beauty. You know, I think it's funny when a lot of times people don't take a chance to see the trees. They don't take a chance to see the birds in the trees. They don't take a chance to see anything. And I think even when I'm in traffic and I'm stopped, even on the highway, I'll look into the heavens and see the clouds and the birds and the trees swaying. And I'll even look down at some other people in their cars. And I think it's interesting. This is something to think about, is that how many times in your car when you're driving, when you're commuting, do you smile? I mean, you're getting somewhere. You're going somewhere. You're doing something. Why not be happy about it? When we're aware of our situation and our circumstances and our surroundings, we're happier. We're healthier. We're more on point. We know things. We feel things. We are our surroundings. We are what we make of our surroundings. The way we see the world is directly correlates back to the way that we see ourselves. The way I see the world is directly correlated to the way that I feel. It's in direct correlation. If you see the world as a very scary place, well then, honey, this world is going to be a scary place. If you see the world as a very happy place, then guess what? The world's going to be a magical place. The more magical you believe it to be, the more magical it'll be. When you think about a ride at the amusement park, if you think it's going to be lame, then it's probably going to be lame. If you think it's going to be intense, then it's probably going to be intense. So think about that. And see life as a magical place. See it as this life you have, this life. Why not see it as magical and brilliant as possible? Why not see it as magical and brilliant as it possibly can? Because guess what? This is your life. This should be absolutely amazing. This should be Technicolor dreams. Why not? Why can't it be? Why do you want to dumb it down? Why do we have to dumb down life? Because you know what? We can't believe that there's more to it. I can't believe there could be this much. It's like going to a fireworks show and going, well, it's all going to be really dull. Colors are going to be dull. Not going to be much. You know what? You're probably going to miss out on the whole fireworks show because you're going to over there be thinking it's going to be dull while everybody else is watching the fireworks show. You're over there like, gosh, I can't wait to leave. Can't believe all the traffic. Oh, geez, what am I going to do? Where's the porta potty? Should have just stayed home with the kids with the sparklers. Shouldn't have done this. But if we know that the fireworks show is going to be amazing, we live with that knowledge. We act with that knowledge. We love with that knowledge. And the same thing applies to our amazing life. If we believe that we can be a firework, if we believe that we can be shining light, if we can be love and light, then guess what? We are love and light. We are love and light. Whatever we believe we are, we are. You know what they say? If you believe it, you can achieve it. If you believe it, that's who you are. And I think that's so interesting. So we have to know that there's more to life than meets the eye. We have to be aware of our surroundings. The third thing is that we have to be aware of negative self-talk. Because negative self-talk will take you completely out of the game of life. If you believe that everybody's out there to get you, then guess what? You're going to feel like everybody's out there to get you. You're not going to feel safe. You're not going to feel secure. You're going to feel stressed out when you're in groups of people. If you feel that you're always misunderstood, then you're going to be always misunderstood. And you know why? Because you're going to act in a way and you're going to share comments in a way that people don't understand. Because remember, you're never understood. When you make laws like that with your words, those are laws with words. When you make laws like that with your words, guess what? It becomes doctrine. It becomes doctrine in your life. You are therefore now bound to that doctrine based on that negative self-talk. I'm never understood. Or nobody ever gives me credit. Or everybody always overlooks me. Or everybody always puts me down. Or I'm never chosen for this. Or I never get a raise and everybody else does. You know what's going to happen? That's going to happen. But you know what? We can change that and we can realize our negative self-talk. And that's what I do on a daily basis with my clients. That's why I am a certified life coach. That's why I'm a therapist. It's because I can help people get to the nitty-gritty, to the heart of the matter. That stuff that they're holding on to that they're not, they don't even know they're holding on to anymore. It's stuff that could have happened 25 years ago. But they're making all their life decisions based on that. Doesn't that seem normal? Think about it. Some concepts, some negative self-talk that entered their brain, that they ended up acquiring, that they lived by, that they believed as reality, and now they make all their decisions based on that negative precursor. And so think about what happens when you go into a state, when you go into a surrounding, when you go to meet new people, and there you are with this negative self-talk. You miss out on everything. You miss out on everything that's good because you're too busy getting weirded out within you. You're too busy looking inside of you going, oh, I'm so scared. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. I hope nobody judges me right now. Oh, God. I shouldn't have worn that. Oh, man, I'm not as smart as them. I hope at the book club they don't figure out how non-smart I am. Maybe they'll be on to me. Maybe they'll kick me out because I'm not that smart. All these things that go in your head, you got to get rid of it. You got to get rid of it, but first you have to realize that it exists. And once you're able to realize it exists, and once you're able to silence it, you're then able to be what? You're able to be authentic. And that's the fourth thing that you can do to see and be aware of life's cues is to be authentic. And the only way that you can be authentic is not to hide anymore, to not judge yourself anymore. And when we stop judging ourselves, guess what? We stop judging others. When you stop judging yourself, you stop judging others. It just is the way it goes. When you stop being negative about yourself, you stop being negative about others. Negativity kind of falls by the wayside because it's really not needed. It just causes angst and stress and anger and untrust and desperation and fear and hatred. And so when we're able to look at this and we're able to be authentic, we can be in the situation. We can see our surrounding. We can see who we are. And the coolest thing, we can see how we are in the equation. And we begin to see the tapestries of life. We begin to see why Bill called me and told me about his friend that had traveled with the Dalai Lama for 2+ years to photograph him. We can see how Titan showed up and was able to pick me up at the house instead of the office to go to the media security detail. And how we ended up talking throughout hours and figuring out that we were in the same place at the same time 1.5 years ago. To show up at the parking garage and run into some parking attendants that I know from one of my stations. And them giving me a hug and telling me exactly where I needed to park at. These are life's cues. Don't ignore them. Begin to see life's cues and your life will begin to be amazing. Remember again, please. please remember to bring your pets in prior to the fireworks displays. I ask you to do that because I know that this is July 4th and I know the fireworks will be shot off and animals have keener ears than we do. And because of that, we must be aware that animals do get frightened by the loud sounds of fireworks. And to ensure their safety and everybody else's safety, bring your pets, especially your dogs, inside so that the sound of the fireworks is muffled. I look forward to seeing you and talking with y'all in the next show and Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess. We'll be back in three shakes.